This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold Golden and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade. It is always great to be saving money and to use technology and to live a more sustainable life.
We interrupt this episode of Energy Matters to take you outdoors.
On the road again.
Hey, this is Commissioner Echols with Energy Matters, and I'm on the road for another segment here at the Georgia World Congress Center at the Smart City Expo. And I've got with me, because we talk about EVs a lot, I've got with me from Green Lots, and you've heard that name if you have an electric car, the Chief Revenue Officer, Jeff Tolnar. Jeff, how's it going?
I'm great, Commissioner Echols. How are you?
We are having a great time on Energy Matters, and I want to talk about just the future of charging, the future of electric transportation. You and I have just been on a panel where we've been talking about this disruption of EVs. You projected 2027. I said 2032. But from your view at Green Lots, what kind of trends are you all seeing in charging, and what have you learned about customers and cars through looking at your data?
Yeah, the trends I think that are most important are, if you would have looked 2 years ago, the activity was on the West Coast. We're seeing now substantial activity in the Northeast. We're seeing more and more programs being developed and launched and even awarded in the Midwest. So one of the latest programs that we're a part of is in Iowa. That's the Heartland. That's an exciting part. So it's migrating from the coasts inward, and those are less about level two, which would be the long dwell time charging, and more about DC fast charging. So where you would be on the go, you'd need to top off. I have 20 minutes, I'll get an 80% charge, but also more and more high power. So we're getting more and more to the point where 150 kilowatt charging capacity and above, so you can get in a 5 to 10 minute range a substantial charge. So that really does fit the on the go need out there. That's one aspect that's changing. The other would be the vehicle OEMs. The vehicle manufacturers are all active now in electric. There's expected to be over 130 brand new EV lines launched by the end of next year, $300 billion. So the OEMs, it used to be is it going to be the chicken or the egg with the EVs? Well, I think the eggs have hatched, and they're all going to start waddling around over the next 12 months. That will give everybody choice, and that's what we really need. We need choice from a low cost all the way up to a luxury capability and even an F-150 equivalent electric.
You know, I just came from a meeting earlier today where Cox Enterprises announced, and they had announced this earlier, so I'm not talking out of school, because they are owned by our parent station, Cox Media Group and Cox Enterprises. They announced that they were investing about $350 million in Rivian. And a lot of folks may know the Rivian makes a truck. And as we think about kind of the next wave of customers that buy EVs, you got, you know, ladies or guys who drive an F-150, who drive a Silverado, moving over to an electric vehicle. That's going to be huge, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And it's not just the traditional OEMs. You're right. It's companies like Rivian, and we're seeing more and more of those pop up all over the place around the world. And again, it really is about providing choice from all the way from an entry-level vehicle to a luxury vehicle, and in all aspects up to the large, heavy-duty trucks, down to, we talked about scooters today, and we talked about electrified bicycles. And really, it's the electrification of mobility. So it's more than just an electric vehicle anymore.
You mentioned about vehicles needing a stronger charge, more amps, more power. I think that's where it's really going to get on the radar of my commission at the Georgia Public Service Commission and a lot of other commissions, because we're talking about significant use of the grid and needing to get a lot of power, you know, to these 20 buses or these 200 buses simultaneously, and that's going to require more wires and more transformers. Talk a little bit about that infrastructure and why that's important for us in the future.
Well, it's essential. The grid has developed over the last 100 years to serve the purpose of household electrification, running your refrigerator, things that have been around for a very long time. Now, electric vehicles have a load that's greater than all of those other elements and maybe even all of them combined. So it will double or triple the needs of electricity on a per household basis once we go to a full electric future. So with that in mind, the grid has been in place with substantial generation capacity, substantial transmission capacity, but the distribution aspect of the grid has, I won't say lagged behind, but it's not where the spend has gone over the last 10, 20, 30 years. So that's the transformers, the wires you see down your streets, the wires that are underground that are serving you. How many times do you have an electrical storm and things start to pop? Well, you're going to see more and more things pop as more and more vehicles start to need a charge. So the utilities are becoming more proactive in replacing infrastructure where they know it's occurring. The key to them is where is the charging going to happen? It's popping up like popcorn. So what we have to do as an industry is we have to work arm in arm with the utilities to provide them visibility into where the charging occurs, allow them time then to upgrade their infrastructure accordingly so we don't have loss of power, loss of energy, safety issues. And we're all aligned there from every constituent that we have out in the city and in the states.
From a public image or a public relations standpoint, we can't afford for electric vehicles to be blamed for this kind of thing. I mean, in Georgia, we have a hard enough time convincing my Republican colleagues that electric vehicles are good for the grid, good for the public interest, and worthy of investment. If these vehicles are causing outages and inconvenience, that's the last thing we want to do. I think that's why it's really important for us to get ready to be able to do this. Certainly the results going to be cleaner air, going to be a quieter experience. You know, it's going to be vehicles that last a longer period of time, lower operating costs. What are some of the other benefits that you're hearing from around the country as you talked with seasoned electric vehicle owners?
I think what I'd focus on are the misconceptions. Some of the misconceptions I've heard are EVs are not as performant as internal combustion. Well, that's not the case. When you step on the gas pedal or the pedal of an EV, it performs. When you try to pull a load in the electric F-150 equivalent, there's been a recent advertisement that they can pull three train cars with an electric F-150. So the fallacy of performance is just not true from an EV perspective. I think the second is total cost of ownership. In 2020, it's expected that EVs will be at cost parity with the equivalent internal combustion. And then we also have to consider, what's the cost of ownership? There's only a few hundred moving parts in an electric vehicle, whereas in my car, a gas-powered car, there's a few thousands of parts. Well, the likelihood of something breaking goes way up. Fueling it via electricity is lower cost than fueling it via gas or diesel or the other means. Fueling costs are lower, operational costs are lower, and the upfront costs are now at parity.
I was recently in Berlin and Munich on a study trip with the Renewable Energy Academy, and one of the surprises to me is that Germans aren't that interested in electric vehicles. That, yeah, their companies are making them, they're shipping them to China, but there seemed to be some resistance there regarding buying something that had as its major component a battery that was made in China, Japan, or Korea. And a resistance in giving up that internal combustion engine that they've taken so long to perfect. If you think about Porsche, Audi, Volkswagen, Mercedes, BMW, you know, so I look as California really as the leader of the world when it comes to electric vehicles. You've traveled, you know, wider than I have and seen more vehicles than I have. What do you see on the horizon for, you know, for EVs in California, in America, in Germany, and across the world?
I think the exciting thing for me is innovation. I love innovation, and it's normal that one country will lead another. Eventually, all countries get to a common place. It just takes time, and there are cultural differences and aspects. What I find exciting is the electrification movement is being coupled with autonomy and autonomous vehicles and changes in logistics and efficiency. And when I look at autonomous, it doesn't scare me that people won't be driving a car. The car will be driving itself. I look at autonomous as a transition over time. It will make it safer, more predictable, and it will also drive things like ride sharing and fewer cars on the street and flexibility. And I don't have to spend capital on a car. I can use a car, buy the drink whenever I need it, and go where I need to go. And so autonomy to me is also autonomy in availability of that resource for me as a homeowner. I may not need two cars in the future. I may need one. I may need none. So I really think it's the coupling of electrification with autonomous, improvements in safety, improvements in efficiency, and overall improvement in the environment and emissions that come along with it.
And there you have it, right here from the World Congress Center. Thank you very much for this interview today, Jeff, and good luck with everything that Green Lots is doing.
Sure. Thank you. Take care.
This is Tim Echols with Energy Matters on the road.
The electric car revolution is coming, and the choices are growing. GEM cars are everywhere. You've seen these low-speed electric vehicles on college campuses, downtown Atlanta streets, and resort islands like St. Simons and Jekyll. GEM cars are street legal, equipped with seatbelts, headlights, and a tag, and can operate on roads with speed limits of 35 miles per hour or less. If you want to know more about these electric cars and trucks, six-passenger shuttles, mobile repair service, or full vehicle wraps, go to GEMCarService.com. That's GEMCarService.com.
John, one of our sponsors for the show, Rowe Insulating Company, is doing a great job in and around Athens, being able to do a lot of what we talk about every single week on the show.
Every time it gets cold, every time it gets hot, it's always that attic that's the problem. And you could attack windows, and that's going to cost you a cold fortune. It is insulation that can solve the problem.
Hey, if you want to get this fixed, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854. Rowe Insulating Company.
Rowe.
Support for Energy Matters comes from Arnold, Golden, and Gregory. AGG takes a business sensibility approach when advising clients. AGG provides industry knowledge, attention to detail, transparency, and value to help businesses and individuals achieve their definition of success. AGG subscribes to the belief not if, but how. We appreciate their weekly support of Energy Matters.
John, that was Jeff Tolnar with Green Lots. I had a chance to sit down with him at that Smart City Expo down at the World Congress Center. Green Lots, of course, is a household name for EV owners. We all know it. Now, maybe our listeners have never heard it and go, what in the world is that? Is that like Big Lots? No. It's not a store.
Except environmentally friendly product?
Yeah. It is a charging company. They have chargers. You activate these things with your phone, or you can call in and they'll activate it from the mothership and turn it on. But one of the unique things about Green Lots, and I remember them sitting down with me and talking about this whole open source thing, John, and, you know, I think, you know, there's frustration in the EV community that, one, we don't all have the same charging charging mechanism, right? You've got the one for the BMW.
The barn, though. I mean, that deal's done.
Yeah, but it was not something that we needed, because you have to have, you know, one thing on one side of the EV charger for German cars, and another thing for the Japanese. Yeah, so, but part of Green Lots' issues is that their software is open source, and they are concerned that charging companies who use this proprietary stuff that then go out of business, leave a stranded charger there that doesn't work, and maybe to give a bad taste in the mouth to the city or the county or the business that invested that $50,000, $70,000, $100,000 in that, and now they're out of business. And like Ecotality, which was one of the early charging companies.
That's right.
And so Greenlot says, you know what? We're going to make our stuff open source. Anybody can work on it. These things will be
that is so great
forever.
I've got an old commercial Blink charger, and nobody can work on that. I mean, yeah, nobody knows how to work on
it. Yeah, he hit on a lot of things in this interview, and one of them is about these higher power chargers. I mean, a Tesla has a bigger battery and can handle more power than, say, an old Nissan Leaf, right?
That's right. Yep, 2-3 times, actually.
Yeah, and as you think about these Porsches and Audis and especially these German cars, they want that stronger charge. Don't
well,
they?
You want less charging time. You want to be driving more, charging less, and that's when you're on the road. You need to be able to hit it hard and make sure that you get as much juice as you can. And level three just doesn't cut it. I mean, they're doing level three, which is great. But they should propagate more level threes for regular electric cars. But a lot of higher end electric car owners really want that super fast charge.
Yeah, and to our listeners, you've got level one, which is just a regular plug that you plug into your garage outlet.
Yeah, you got the same plug as a toaster oven, right?
Yeah. So level two would be the dryer plug. It's a little stronger.
That's right.
And then that third level, the DC fast charger, they often call it. Puts that energy directly into the battery.
It's like a big gulp size cup thing.
You know, one of the things that came up with Cox Enterprises and their auction business, and I had basically given them this advice probably about a year and a half ago. They were really wanting to do a better job in evaluating electric cars because they were getting these cars back from the leasing companies. They were selling them at auction. Right. And one of the great things about Cox Enterprises and their auction business is their conditioning report. It's accurate. So a dealer sitting in Texas can buy a car in Atlanta and buy it with full assurance of knowing if that car has a 92 grade, that they know exactly what they're getting.
The problem was
on the electric cars, Cox was not charging the cars. And so they didn't have a score for the battery. And so if you're an electric car buyer, what that battery will charge up to is everything.
Right. That's
and
exactly
so
right.
one of the changes Cox wanted to make in their auction business was being able to charge that car and put on the condition report, this Nissan Leaf charged to 78 miles.
Right.
And so that would give a dealer the assurance to know, you know what, that car's not worth $10,000. It may be only worth $7,500.
Right.
And I'm not going to bid, you know, more than that for it. And the problem was, without that score on that battery, dealers were gun shy about buying these electric cars.
That's cool.
And so they were really not giving as much as the cars were worth.
He said something else that interested me. He talked about the electrification of mobility, something you and I understand and know because we're freaking nerds. You know, I see the scooters as like the early adopters of this in the city. And I think many people's first adoption of an electric vehicle has been a scooter. Mine was a good experience. Yours was not. But I think a lot of people will see that as the early canary that lives or dies in a coal mine.
I mean, really, the golf carts, people play golf. Golf carts were actually before that. I mean, not all golf carts are electric. Some have little gas engines in them.
Right, and they're annoying. Yeah. Those are annoying. But the electric ones people like.
Yeah, he talked about electric bikes. You know, I think the bikes are safer than the scooters. I mean, there's a lot of accidents going on in these cities. And you got a city like Atlanta where, one, you're not supposed to be on the sidewalk with it. And so the little bike lane there may have little holes in it, potholes.
Or there's no bike lane.
It's dangerous.
It is dangerous.
People get killed out there on the scooters.
I know.
You know, one of the other things he talked about was the importance of the infrastructure, more wires, more transformers.
His concern that we're going to be overloading the infrastructure as more cars come into the play.
And it should scare all of us to death when he said more and more things pop.
Yeah,
I saw you flinch when he said that.
I flinched and you took a note because that's important. We got to realize this electric grid of ours is kind of fragile. Now, in Georgia, we are very, I mean, you talk more about this. This is your expertise. But in Georgia, we are blessed with a little B that we have a robust generation systems, a lot of plants, and we have a pretty good grid.
We do, and you think about, you know, the grid out there, you know, it's that right of way those big power lines run,
right?
And you know, it runs from plant to plant.
A lot of it should be underground, that's my opinion.
Undergrounding is something that some think is good. Others, like my friend that runs the California Public Utilities Commission, he's a big one for poles. He doesn't like underground. He feels like because the water is down there,
yeah. And
those lines are, they're covered. There's just not copper wire sitting there in the water, but he just feels like that it's not the panacea that everybody thinks.
That's very interesting. I took us off topic, but that idea of grids and how we do it, whether it's underground, above ground, how many poles, how many wires, all of that stuff is critical. I'm charging a vehicle right now, this morning at my home, and it is pulling the battery power from the sun from the day before. And as the sun comes up this morning, it will be juicing up.
Yeah.
From the sun, but then now it's from the battery.
Yeah, and I think more and more folks, as these battery prices come down, they're going to take advantage of that. In our state, certainly, we approved 80 megawatts of utility-scale battery.
Yeah.
We're going to be trying these batteries out at military bases, maybe at colleges, maybe at some hospitals. I don't know precisely where they will wind up. We approved a Second Life battery project
Right. For
old electric car batteries, you know, that were replaced because of a warranty issue.
Great idea.
Yeah, and putting them in a container.
That's a great idea.
Using a battery management system, and then charging more cars.
Come on. Yeah.
Yeah, and we talked about, on this show, composting, recycling, repurposing. All of it really speaks to stewardship,
yes.
Right? Not something I necessarily want mandated on people.
Oh, but no, I certainly not a mandate.
I want people to be able to do what they want. I mean, this is America.
America!
Yeah, but we certainly want to educate people about it as part of the purpose of our show.
One thing he talked about was misconceptions. Y'all sort of said we're going to do three misconceptions, and I ended up writing down five. Because, I mean, they just are so
many. Take us through those, John, because I think that is something that people need to think about. And I think once they kind of deal with that, they're more likely to get an electric car.
That's correct. There's underperformance.
Yeah. And so you think about the Tesla. I mean, that's a fast car.
Boom.
And so when it comes to, you know, somebody that wants a cool car, a Mustang, a Corvette, a Porsche, an
this
Audi.
This is your kind of vehicle.
Yeah. The Tesla and, frankly, these other companies have seen the handwriting on the wall.
Yep.
And they are now, you know, either creating a car that has a plug that's a hybrid.
That's right.
Plug-in hybrid. PHEV is called, plug-in hybrid electric vehicle, or a fully electric vehicle that's really fast that can compete with a Tesla.
Yeah, and the other point he made was about the F-150s, that electric vehicles, and to my recollection, he said these things will pull trains. And it's true.
It's a commercial. There's a commercial with an electric Ford F-150 that's pulling, I think he said, three train cars.
Yeah.
And I saw the commercial.
So
I don't remember how many it was.
You've got load, you've got speed, and arguably they're superior on all those fronts to an internal combustion engine. So done. Okay, that argument's over. Then you say, well, they're very expensive vehicles. He also made the counterpoint that prices are coming down. I've been talking about batteries coming down for absolutely years. Prices are collapsing on batteries. How much cheaper are gas cars getting? Not. They tend to stay the same or go up. But electric cars are getting cheaper, so the trend is your friend. Electric cars will cross over. He said 20, I think 21. Point is, soon.
Yeah, that total cost of ownership. Explain to listeners what he means by
that. That's really the combination of both your purchase price, your initial capital cost, and then the fuel cost and the maintenance. So how much maintenance? When I take it in, I'm getting tires. They're topping off my fluid, my windshield wiper fluid, but I don't have other fluids. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, well, we hope that you will try out an EV. You can call a Lyft in Atlanta, and there's a decent chance you'll get one of those Bolts, and I certainly have owned three of them. John, you have as well.
Yep.
So you can see more on our Twitter feed. John, you're at
New Energy Guy.
And our show's at Matters Radio. I'm at Tim Eccles, and we'll just post our cars up there and let you take a look at it.
Sure enough.
And You know, stick around. We're going to continue to talk about the Smart City Expo. I'm Tim Eccles. You're listening to Energy Matters.
Join us.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Creative Solar USA is a Georgia-based turnkey installer of innovative solar panel systems. They're dedicated to energy solutions for both your home and business. With their NABCEP certified installers, they ensure their clients receive the highest quality of solar energy systems in the industry. Contact CSUSA today at 770-485-7438 or go to creativesolarusa.com.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Energy and Environment.
This half hour of Energy Matters is sponsored by Energy and Environment. Energy and Environment's commercial, industrial, and government efficiency contracting services lower utility bills for their customers. And we talk a lot about that on Energy Matters. They specialize in custom lighting, retrofit solutions, and a lot of other stuff. Energy and Environment brings over 20 years of experience to your place of work. See what they can do for you at Energy and Environment. Spell out the word energyandenvironment.com.
This is Tim Eccles with another segment of Energy Matters, here with my friend Eric Tannenblatt, who works for Denton's. Eric, tell me a little bit about what you guys are doing over there in your shop at Denton.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. Well, Denton's, as you know, most people know, is the world's largest law firm, and I lead our global public policy and regulatory practice. But in addition to that, I lead our autonomous vehicle practice. And we have about 85 partners all over the globe that are working with companies that are in the autonomous vehicle ecosystem. So whether they're auto manufacturers, security companies, fleet management companies, because it's a space that is continuing to grow and something that we're going to be hearing and seeing more and more about.
Why is it important for a law firm to be involved in autonomous vehicles? I think folks think about technology, car manufacturing. What's the legal nexus of this?
Sure. Well, there's a lot of regulatory issues. You know, historically, the federal government has handled the regulations and laws surrounding the safety of a vehicle, and state governments have handled the regulatory and laws surrounding the actual driver. Well, in the case of autonomous technology, the car is the driver. And so this is a whole new area, and there's going to be a lot of legal and regulatory issues at all levels of government. Right now, the federal government has yet to pass any legislation to deal with autonomous vehicles. There was legislation that was pending in the last session of Congress, but it didn't pass. And so you have this patchwork of laws around the country right now in the United States. A lot of it is surrounding testing of autonomous vehicles, but states like California, which is highly regulated, have actually, you know, gone a little bit further. And so at some point, the federal government's going to need to step in because, you know, autonomous vehicles are going to happen. And, you know, you can't stop at the state line and say, okay, well, what are the laws now in this particular state? And so I think you're going to see the federal government get more actively involved.
So to that point, if you're in Georgia and you're driving autonomous, and you're in an autonomous vehicle and you're going down I-75, but you're going to get off and see your grandmother out in, you know, in rural, you know, Montezuma, Georgia, how important is it that those counties, all 159 counties in Georgia, get ready for this? And how do you go about convincing someone in a very poor county that this is an important expenditure of taxpayer money?
Yeah, that's a good question. And to comfort everyone, it's not going to happen anytime soon in terms of the next year or two. I think we're several years away from seeing autonomous vehicles, you know, in the main throughout Georgia and some of the rural counties. You know, I think you should also look at electric vehicles. You need to talk about that because autonomous vehicles are all electric vehicles. And as we're seeing, We still have a lot of electric vehicle infrastructure that needs to be built out throughout the state. And you're starting to see more and more auto manufacturers move towards electric vehicles because, as you know, Tim, we're only, probably less than a decade away from where electric vehicles are going to be cheaper than combustible engine vehicles. So we're moving in that direction. But with regards to autonomous vehicles, I think the more we could get autonomous vehicles out there and test those vehicles so that the public gets to see them, the more comfortable they're going to get with the technology. I think the biggest challenge right now is public acceptance. It's sort of the fear of the unknown. And that's why I've been so bullish about autonomous vehicle testing, because I think the more people can see that this is actually a valuable mode of transportation, the more comfortable they'll be when they're actually out there for people to use. And I think that with building out electric vehicle infrastructure, with autonomous vehicle fleets rolling out, and that will start probably in urban centers first, but it'll move across the country. You know, we're here at the Smart Cities Expo in Atlanta, and one of the exhibitors is a company called Enride from Sweden, which has a autonomous truck, and there's no cab, and it runs on the highway. And I think that autonomous trucks is probably something that we're going to see before we see autonomous cars commercialized. And, you know, a state like Georgia, which is such a big logistics state, you know, with the Savannah port and the Atlanta airport, there's a lot of freight that goes on our highways. So I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we don't see in the next few years the testing and deployment of autonomous trucks on our highways.
You and I are both Republicans. I'm a statewide constitutional officer, and you've worked for a U.S. senator and for a governor. We've seen our colleagues really embrace solar over the last 5 years, a 10x drop in price over the last dozen years, and it is projected that with the similar reduction in battery prices, that this is what's going to allow these electric vehicles to do, as you've said, to actually become cheaper than ICE internal combustion engines. Do you anticipate our Republican colleagues having a similar heart change towards electric vehicles that they have had towards solar?
Well, you know, Republicans are free marketeers, and I think the market is going to demand it. I think consumers are going to demand it, and I think the more information that gets out there, I think people will come around. If you look at the auto industry right now, I mean, you have some auto manufacturers are no longer producing combustible engine vehicles, and they're moving towards only electric vehicles. And so I think the market's going to drive us that way. I think that, Republican lawmakers are believe in the free market, and consumers are going to demand it.
One of my duties with my colleagues is to regulate the utility, Georgia Power, and make sure they have the funds to do the things that they need to do in the direction. And as we get into our rate case, which we do every 3 years with them, one of the things that I'm looking at is the infrastructure to charge a lot of vehicles simultaneously. I'm not talking about Nissan Leafs or Teslas here. I'm thinking of bus fleets, truck fleets, Amazon Prime vans that might be electrified, and the importance of all of that electric infrastructure that needs to be on the pole and at the transformer level, expensive infrastructure. How important is it that the utility be given what they need in order to be able to prepare for this coming EV revolution?
Yeah, I think it's very important, and I think, you know, we're fortunate to have a company like Georgia Power that is very forward-thinking, and I think they recognize that this is happening and this is coming. And so I'm hopeful that I know where you are, but I hope that your colleagues on the PSC also understand that this is the way things are moving, and you know, it's y'all's responsibility to make sure that, you know, we're prepared for the future, and that's obviously working with our state utilities.
Are you seeing more and more companies like UPS, Amazon, others that have an Atlanta footprint begin to talk about their conversion over to electrification? What kind of conversations are you having, with these type of companies?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I think it was not too long ago that I read that UPS bought some Tesla trucks for some of their delivery. And so I don't think you can be a company in the logistics business and not be looking at the technology, both from an electric vehicle standpoint and from an autonomous vehicle standpoint. You're starting to see there's a company called Nero that's doing, you know, grocery delivery. Kroger has, I believe it was Kroger, entered into a partnership with them. And so you're starting to see whether it's Domino's Pizza looking at delivering pizza through autonomous vehicles. They're actually testing it in Miami right now. And so I think you're seeing more and more of that.
You know, as you think about challenges that are ahead of us, I know that you work closely with the legislature and with my Republican colleagues and the leadership in Georgia. And we've talked about that. But the city of Atlanta, which is democratically run for the most part, you know, a city like Atlanta really is the place that all this is going to begin. What are some things that you think that it needs to happen in the city of Atlanta to prepare for this?
Well, I want to applaud the mayor, you know, but even before she was mayor, when she was on the city council, she was responsible for sponsoring the you know, the ordinance that now requires electric vehicle charging in new development. And I think that's one thing that, you know, city leaders can do is to continue to build out the infrastructure. I think there's also going to need to be changes made to some of our zoning laws as it relates to ride sharing. If we talk about, you know, in the future having autonomous fleets, you know, you're going to need places to drop people off or to pick people up. And if you have autonomous fleet vehicles, you're not going to need parking spaces. And so, again, right now there's a requirement of a number of parking spaces that's needed for any new development. Well, if you move to a society where we have autonomous fleets that are constantly running, you know, that will take away the need for all the parking lots and parking decks, which will allow for more green space or more opportunity for economic development. So there's a lot that the cities can do. And as you acknowledged, I think things, as it relates to autonomous vehicles and electric vehicles, I think they're going to start in the urban centers. I mean, Atlanta being one. But I think, you know, we should also look at the other large metropolitan areas throughout Georgia, Savannah, Augusta, Macon, Columbus, Albany. I think all of those metropolitan centers, you're going to start seeing this technology take hold.
Just in our final 30 seconds, if folks are interested in knowing more about this, I know you do a Friday newsletter. How can folks get on that subscription list, and where would you recommend they go?
Yeah, they can go to driverlesscommute.com, the driverlesscommute.com. We have a blog. Not only do we publish a weekly newsletter, but we have a running news feed of stories in the autonomous vehicle space from around the globe. And we also post some interesting articles about things that are happening in this whole ecosystem. It's very exciting.
Well, it's been great having you with me today. Thank you very much, Eric.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
This is Tim Eccles with Energy Matters on the Road. Tim Eccles here for Solar Sun World. No doubt you've seen solar panels popping up all over Georgia. If you want the precision of German engineering when it comes to solar, Solar Sun World is for you. The folks there understand the complexities of solar and how to make it work, from tax credits to inverters to accelerated depreciation. They'll unpack it all. They've been in business for over 25 years. To find out more, go to solarsunworld.com. That's solarsunworld.com. Hey, it's Commissioner Tim Eccles, host of Energy Matters. I want to tell you about Kevin Rowe and Rowe Insulating Company. If you need insulation anywhere within 60 miles of Athens, Georgia, you need to call 706-795-2854. It's important, isn't it, John?
It is the most important thing you can do in your house.
It's the low-hanging fruit of everything that we talk about on Energy
right.
Matters every single week.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854. Rowe Insulating Company.
Get comfortable.
Energy Matters would like to thank Gas South for its support of the show. Gas South has a no-deposit policy and offers some of the lowest per-therm rates in the state. Use the promo code MATTERS for a special deal. Gas South, the difference is good.
Welcome back to Energy Matters. I'm Tim Eccles, your host. John Noel, my co-host. John?
Oh, yeah.
Great interview with Eric Tannenblatt.
Yeah. That guy, he's a good guy. I mean, he's a Republican, of course, but he's a good man and he's smart.
And, you know, he works at Denton's law firm. You ever been up in top of that SunTrust building down there at the Denton? That gold plated up there.
Mighty fancy.
It is fancy. If, you know, folks love to go into these law firms because they always have the top floor of these skyscrapers. Yep. So I have a lot of lunch and learns at these law firms because people like to go there and see it.
That's true.
Right? And they are fancy. And they have the best views. Well, Eric worked for the late Senator Paul Coverdale. He was his, I think they called them AAs back then, administrative assistants. That was actually the chief of staff. I think they call him chief of staff now.
Wow.
But he headed up Coverdale's shop. He then worked for Sonny Perdue.
Coverdale passed in the early 2000s.
I don't know.
I think I was in the legislature when he passed because I remember they named our legislative office building after
him. Yeah, yeah. And he worked for Sonny Perdue. And so he's very well connected, and he drives an electric car.
Ah.
And, you know, what's significant about this, John, is that if I mean, our state right now is basically under the control of us Republicans. That's me, not you.
Oh, yeah.
My Republican friends haven't really been that friendly or favorable to electric vehicles, and we all know that. And we're not going to go down that road today. But let me just say that having someone with the stature and prominence of Aaron Tannenblatt lobbying on behalf of electric cars—that's
a big deal.
Yeah, and you know the angle that he's going on this is with the Republicans is not the environmental clean air. All the stuff that you would hear out of, you know, a typical
libs,
a typical Democratic leaning person.
My people.
Yeah. But he's going the technology angle, the economic development angle, the autonomous car angle, and the fact that we can attract companies.
That's true.
Like one of the things that I sent a letter to the mayor about making Metropolitan Parkway, which is down on the south side, as you go to the airport,
mayor
down
Bottoms.
85, I sent it to Mayor Bottoms of Atlanta, the idea of renaming that road Electric Avenue because of Cox Enterprises' pivot facility there and their focus on electric mobility.
That's actually a good idea.
And attracting other ancillary companies like a Green Lots, like a ChargePoint, like companies that are going to make autonomous vehicle technology, and that not just for the car, but
create a hub
for the road.
Down
exactly.
There.
Yep. Exactly. Yep.
I think it's a great idea.
And so I am pushing this. I haven't gotten any love from the mayor on this so far. She hadn't even responded to my letter.
That's a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's okay. I'm a Republican, and I understand that. But having prominent leaders like Eric involved is important.
It is.
In fact, Denton's hosted the Clean Energy Roadshow. It's the first time we had ever had it in top of a skyscraper. So we actually lined up our vehicles on the, I think it's Baker Street that is on the side of their building, and we had it all down the curb. We had the police blocked off the road for us, and then we went upstairs to the top of the SunTrust building to do the seminar piece of the
for people that don't know, he references the Clean Energy Roadshow. For the listeners that are not familiar with this, this is something Tim cooked up a decade or so ago.
Nine years ago.
And it just basically, he wanted to showcase all the various technologies, transportation technologies, from electric and propane school buses to electric cars.
Natural gas cars.
It's how you and I met originally years ago.
Yeah, you were a speaker. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I was like, wow, this guy's kind of cool, and this is a great idea. And I just think you ought to get the accolades for that, and people ought to understand what we talk about when we say there's a roadshow, because this was what it was. And it's not just in Atlanta. That's the thing I think is so brilliant about it. We're going around the state because the state's kind of big, and it ain't just Atlanta.
Yeah, so it's cleanenergyroadshow.com. You know, one of the things I learned that I didn't know this week about the city of Albany, depending
Albany
on where you're from, they purchased 7 CNG buses, and the city's running that. They've ordered 8 more. And what they discovered is they compared the repair on those 7 buses with 7 diesel buses. $178,000 of repair in a year for 7 CNG buses, $438,000 repair for 7 diesel buses. The payback on that additional cost for the more expensive engine, which a CNG engine is, around a 5-year payback at that rate.
Just on the maintenance
side. Just on the maintenance side.
Wow. Now,
so that doesn't get into basically how much cleaner the emissions. You know,
what's a bus cost? Do you happen to know?
I don't know. I don't know what the bus costs.
Yeah, so so the payback tells you right there, though, that it economically makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And, John, I mean, why is it? And I mean, we weren't planning on talking about this, but I want to ask you this question.
Go for it.
Because I'm having people from California tell me that that natural gas is the new coal. In other words, that because it's fossil, it's bad, and they're moving away from it. They don't like fracking, and I know you have concerns about fracking, about natural gas itself. I mean, why would the Democratic Party in California or other places, why would they, is it just because it's fossil-based? Why would they
it
be going
fossil-based,
after that?
It is fossil-based, but it's also highly, intensive when it comes to that fracking. You have a lot of methane that gets extracted, that gets given off when you're doing fracking and
so
things like
this. Fugitive methane, I think
you
they call it.
You said it better than I. Yeah, that's right. Fugitive methane, and that makes the carbon footprint of natural gas, not just the gas you use in your car, but it's all the natural gas that's wasted or methane that's released getting to that dadgum gas and the wells that are polluted. Natural gas ain't all that natural. That's my contention. It's better than coal, thank you very much, but it's not that great.
You know, I had constituents that had complained to me about this. I went out to Western Colorado, looked at the WP.
They were not from Western Colorado.
No,
that would be something.
Yeah, the Georgia constituents.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
I went to Western Colorado, where there's a big shale play out there.
Yeah.
And shale play basically means that it's the mother lode of, of natural gas. And WPX Energy had the rights to that. They had basically acquired the rights. And then they would take land in 10-acre parcels at a time,
right?
And it would take 21 days with three big Canadian engines to drill down, and they would the difference in now and way back then is the same kind of drilling technology in terms of using the same engines, except they're running it on natural gas. They're running it on the gas that they actually pull out of the ground.
Yeah.
So not diesel.
Right.
So it is cleaner. And as they drill down, they're going horizontally. Right.
Yes.
So it almost is like a spider's legs as they go down on that 10-acre block. After 21 days, the fracking crew comes in, and the fracking crew spends a week there using that high-pressure water mixed with sand and the chemicals that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And it busts that rock open. And then once that is flowing, they cap that. The fracking crew moves to another site. So fracking is not a continual operation. It's a one-week operation. But the problem, John, had been, one, as the water bubbled back up with the chemicals, it needed to be collected. It needed to be taken to a water reclamation facility, almost like a wastewater treatment plant.
And that's a lot of trucking.
It is trucking. And there were, I think they told me that they had 40,000 water trucks in the basin.
God. And those run on not propane, not natural gas.
No, those trucks are running on diesel. They are running on diesel.
So it's just a large footprint, and I get it. But what we really need to be doing is just jumping all the heck over on solar and batteries and efficiency. This is what we always miss. So we want to talk about new generation. We want to talk about what's sexy in solar and other things. But we don't want to talk about efficiency, about making our cars more efficient, about making our homes more efficient and buildings more efficient, changing our light bulbs, changing our consumption patterns, and changing our technologies.
Yeah, and I think, states, they're going to do, different states are going to do it differently. California's obviously, on the cutting edge of electric car revolution. I mean, they're doing it better than Germany's doing it.
Interesting.
And, Germany has like 60,000 electric cars. California has 600,000.
That's amazing. I did not know
so
that.
So California has got all the levers of government, all the agencies, whether that's that California Air Resources Board, their Public Service Commission, Public Utility Commission.
They're all pointing in the same
governor's
direction.
Office, the legislature.
Right.
Everybody's pointing
in the same direction. And China's doing the same thing. Of course, their levers are altogether different. It's a hammer. literally a sickle and a hammer, and they're telling people what the heck they're going to do. Of course, California's a little different, but it is the same thing going on in China. They have decided, by golly, that they are going to go electric, and it's happening. In fact, there are 200 or 300 electric car and vehicle companies in China right now.
Wow. And I've been there. I've seen that. I've seen those electric scooters. I think, to me,
every scooter over there is electric.
Because scooters don't have a catalytic converter.
Yes.
The fact that they were able to convert those scooters to electricity, to me, that is a bigger gain for air quality than even the cars.
You're right.
Because cars with a catalytic converter, at least are collecting that.
Right.
Scooters don't do it.
That's right.
And neither do generators sitting underneath food
carts. Bought a lawnmower with California-compliant emissions, and it's an internal combustion engine. Don't tell anybody. But I bought a riding lawnmower, and it's California-compliant, which means it just uses less, and it costs a little more, and that's good for the planet.
Yeah, and we've had guests on from Howard Brothers who talked about propane lawn equipment and electric lawn equipment. I think it's going.
We're going electric,
yeah,
man.
Well, this has been a great show as we've heard from folks from the Smart City Expo. Eric Tannenblatt, he does a cool thing, and we mentioned that on the show. His little newsletter. I hope you subscribe to that if you're interested in autonomous cars. Obviously, you can go to John's Twitter feed.
New Energy Guy,
and our show's Twitter feed at Matters Radio. I'm at Tim Eccles, and we put photos, and we kind of put our guest from our show on there, and sometimes even Logan Booker, our producer, chimes in on this stuff. It's great to have him involved. Well, it's been a great show. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. I'm Tim Eccles. You've been listening to Energy Matters.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Eccles and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.